You're listening to the Podcast Detroit Network. Visit www.podcastdetroit.com for more information. The views and opinions expressed on this show do not necessarily represent those of the network, its advertisers, owners, or sponsors.
Hi, everybody. Welcome to episode one of Trust the Yoga with 359 Degree Yoga. My name's Jennifer Perry. I am the owner of 359 Degree Yoga in Wyandotte, Michigan. And I'm sitting here with Katie Scarsella. Say hi, Katie.
Hello.
We're going to do an interview with her just in a little while here, but I wanted to introduce and just lay some groundwork with why we decided to come in and start a podcast for the studio and just give you a little bit of history and a little more intimate conversation with the studio, how it opened, what we're about. And as we move into the podcast, I am hoping, my goal is to really lay a platform and some groundwork for all of the amazing instructors that are a part of the studio and all of the work that they do off the mat. So often in yoga, if you're a yoga practitioner, a yoga teacher, we do so much physical asana practice, but really there's so much more beyond that. And that is the part that I'd like to bring and just shine some light on, because the instructors at our studio are just awe-inspiring and inspire me every day to do things that make me feel comfortable, like this podcast. So just a little bit about me. I have been a yoga practitioner for about 24 years, and my story goes a little something like this. My first yoga class was with a very special teacher to me. His name is Johnny Kest. He owns Center for Yoga. And when I was in my early 20s, he taught a community yoga class in a small little dingy place above the Wonderground Magic Shop, which was in downtown Royal Oak. And a friend of mine brought me to his class. And the rest is history. I spent many, many Thursdays, I think it was, with him at this community yoga class, and eventually made it to his first studio that he opened in Southfield and spent many years there, and then eventually moved through some different studios as I moved to different parts of Metro Detroit. And yoga's just always been a very big part of my life. It has brought me through many challenging, traumatic times, as well has been close to my heart during all the joy as well. So with that being said, there was always a energy within me from that first class I ever took with him that I either wanted to teach or provide a place for others to practice yoga and experience what I was experiencing during that time. So over the next 15 years, I still practiced. I worked in corporate America for many, many years. I was in executive retail, and that served me for a very long time. I was very happy doing that type of work, and I traveled and eventually had kids and a family, and it provided a very solid, financial, secure life for me and my kids. And I would say over the last 5 years, that began to crumble for me. And basically, I would say about 3 or 4 years ago, I loved my job, but there was something inside of me that was calling to do more service, to really launch out and do something that I was absolutely passionate about, which was teaching yoga at the time. So after going through 3 teacher trainings and really beginning to watch my body crumble from this split inside of me, I began to get very sick. And I really believe that was from stress. It was from stress from not knowing whether to leave my corporate job and start this journey. Moving away from the financial security was a big, big thing for me when you are raising 2 children. So eventually the split inside of me got so big and the stress got so big that I realized I was no longer an asset to this company, nor were they to me. So I took what I call my 40 days to clarity. I took 40 days and journaled for 40 days, whether this was the right move for me to leave. And everything said yes. So as a very intuitive spiritual soul, I made the choice to leave and move into my teaching wholeheartedly. It was not easy. There were many roadblocks. And at the time, I was doing some work with a corporate real estate company downtown, and I was doing these wonderful, big, giant window displays as they were buying many, many properties at the time. And it was just a side business that I had started along with my full-time job and teaching. So I took some more work that I had been at the time kind of turning it away because I didn't have all the time. So I left my corporate job and began doing some more in-depth work with this company doing windows displays. And unfortunately, a couple weeks after leaving my corporate job, they also said they wouldn't be using me any further. And my last project with this company was a couple days before Christmas. So, and this was 2014. So I basically hadn't had time to process that I had really no income other than my three classes that I was teaching at the time. And on Christmas Eve, I went and did our Christmas festivities with my children and put them to bed and gave myself a little bit of time to process what was really happening. And I bundled up and I went outside, and I have a yoga room off the back of my house. It's not heated. So I had my coat on, and I asked the question out to the universe, not really expecting an answer back. However, an answer did come back. And the answer, the question I had was, this is it. You know, where can I go to provide the most healing and open up my studio? And earlier that year, 11 months earlier, my sister, Kim Henderly, had passed away. And we have had many conversations from her side, the spirit world, into this side. And tonight, that Christmas Eve night, was really no different. And she answered me. And she said, you need to go downriver. And I was very shocked because I didn't know this part of Metro Detroit very well, but I listened and heard why. I asked her if Wyandotte was where I should really locate, and she said yes. We continued to have a conversation that night, but I was so moved and so inspired by her presence and her communication with me that evening I went to bed, and my clock in my room was, this is a little bit of the story by how the name came. The clock in my room was blinking 359. It wasn't 3:59 in the morning, and I have no idea why my clock was blinking those numbers, but it sparked in me my journey with my angels. They speak to me through numbers, and that's another podcast for another day. But I looked at my clock and just was in awe, and I felt that it was in that moment that seed that had been inside of me for 22 years had finally surfaced. And the next 9 months, I took scouting and looking for a place, the vision that I had in my head. I had many, many roadblocks, many, lots of dead ends, and eventually started looking elsewhere outside of downtown Wyandotte, and was in different areas like Woodhaven and Brownstown and all these different areas, and just wasn't finding what I was looking for. And one day, driving down West Road, my sister basically appeared and lists and started talking to me again, once again in my car, and said, turn around, in her bossy little way. That's how she was, very loving and bossy. And just so you know, when spirit dies, when somebody in your life dies, their personality stays exactly the same. So you know it's them talking to you. So she said, turn around, you're going the wrong way, go back to Wyandotte. So I literally did a U-turn on West Road, drove back into Wyandotte, and found the space, which is now 359 Degree Yoga. So that is a little bit of the story, a little deep, intimate story about how it came to be. It's become bigger than me in many ways, and it's really the instructors that are now living or doing such pioneering things out of the studio off of the mat that just continue to inspire me. And the first person that I hired at the studio was Katie, who was sitting across from me. And we're going to get into her story in just a moment here. She was just, most of the instructors were intuitively drawn, I think, to the studio. We really do provide a place of healing and service, and all of us are just strong spiritual empaths that are really looking to serve. And that's what I love the most about all of them and what we provide and what we give. So that's a little bit about my journey. It's been, we've been open 1 year, just about a year, and it's been a wonderful adventure in learning how to A, run a business, B, stay inspired with my own children and my own home life. And it's a steep, steady process, but I really hope and my vision through this first episode and as we continue is that you'll be inspired from the instructors and the wonderful stuff they're doing both in the classroom and out of the classroom because they continue to inspire me. Katie and I, so interesting story. Katie and I were, we had many mutual friends. We both live on the east side and we are nowhere near Wyandotte, which is another interesting tidbit. Nothing spirit does is always very easy, but if you listen, there's always a reward at the end. So it never occurred to me that Wyandotte was, you know, 50 minutes or 45 minutes from my home. It just was where I knew I needed to be. So with that being said, Katie and I both live on the east side. Our kids are in the same school system. And we had a lot of mutual friends over the years that said, oh, you need to meet this Katie. You need to meet this Katie. And we eventually met and we connected right away. And our friendship aligned very quickly and easily as both yoga practitioners, very interested in our own children's lives and the emotional well-being of children, which is where we're going to go to in a moment when you guys get to meet Katie a little bit more. And she was the first one I hired and I'm continually inspired by her, her classes, what she brings both in the classroom and out. She's just a kind, genuine, authentic soul that is starting this wonderful new, LLC called In Mind. And it's mindfulness training for kids. But before we get into that, I just want to say hello, Katie.
Hi.
I want to first, and since this is a yoga podcast, there's been so many years through this process of yoga that I've continually just trusted the process, trusted my yoga practice, trusted all of it, which is why the name Trust the Yoga really came to me. Katie and I have a love affair for podcasts. There's so many amazing ones out there that we, in our long drive to Wyandotte from the east side, we are constantly sharing podcasts with each other. So I hope that this platform provides just a really wonderful, inspiring place for Metro Detroiters to hear about all the amazing yogis out here in this Metro Detroit area, both with 359 Yoga and beyond down the road. So Katie, I would like to ask you, hello, how long you've been practicing yoga and let's start with that. How long have you and how did yoga find you?
Yeah. So let's see. I probably have dabbled in yoga maybe perhaps for the last 15 years, I would say. And by dabbled, I would say the first five is maybe doing a class a year. And I remember once a teacher saying to me that yoga finds you when you're ready. And that was completely the case for me. And that happened to be when I was pregnant with my firstborn. So let's see, she's 10 and a half. So roughly 11 years ago is when I really actively had the time and invested the time into myself and learning about what yoga is. And from a past of lots of high anxiety, a massive ADD brain, and just really struggling to maintain and keep up. Though I did find some resilience throughout like school and college. I look back at some patterns that I had and really recognize how active and talkative my mind was and how it took me a lot longer to accomplish things. So when I came into pregnancy, first pregnancy is always an interesting time, something new. I started taking a prenatal course, and it was through the hospital I was delivering my oldest, who is Abby. And instantly the teacher who came in, and she was an older teacher, and just the level of calmness when she walked in and peace that I felt really was the first time I picked up on sort of like an energetic vibe. And it was different than what I would say prior to that. When I would look at someone with regard, it might be like things that I wanted to emulate or be like, or like, oh, I wish I could be this way. With her, it was more, that's what I needed in my life, like for me personally. So she did a lot of, obviously it was prenatal and very gentle, but just breathing. And then I just slowly started to notice how my mind quieted and without realizing that it never really was. So that was kind of my first take on yoga. And I remember when that ended, I was about a week or two away from my due date with Abby, and I was hugely pregnant, and I found a small studio near my house, and I was like, oh, they do a week for free. Perfect. I'll try it out before I have this baby and see if I like the instructors. And I remember walking to the studio, which I was super proud of myself of doing 2 weeks before giving birth. And it was a 6 a.m. class. So it was like 5:30 in the morning. And I came to this class not knowing anything. It had fancy words like vinyasa, ashtanga, and I couldn't pronounce them. But I said, I'm just going to check it out. A 6 a.m. class can't be that hard. And it was an ashtanga class. And the teacher literally looked at me like I was crazy and was like, have you practiced this before? And I said, I've done prenatal yoga. And she said, when is your due date? And I said, about a week from now. And she said, okay, we'll just see what you can do. Do what you can do. And I clearly made her anxious. So, but I will say that though that was my one class I did during my free week, after I was cleared to come back, I found a teacher I really connected to at that particular studio. And again, it was that presence and the confidence that she sort of held in the space. And there was no music. And I remember the first class when she would call out Sanskrit words, not having any clue what she was saying because it was so foreign to me. And then watching people balancing on their hands and all of that jazz, all the fancy stuff that you'll see within some classes, and just being completely captivated. And I was like, I need to learn how to do this. Yes. So that's kind of when I found yoga and just realized that there was something I could do to help quiet my mind. I could stop blaming others for things or, you know, my sort of the tendencies or the things I surrounded myself with as being, oh, that's why I did that. Or my mind is just active. I can't control that. I can't change that. Yoga actually made me realize I could. So I would say for the last, for sure, 10 years to 11 years has been a true dedication to the practice. So that's when I found it.
Amazing. I can say that my journey was long in my own practice, and it took me many, many years to really get to the point where I wanted to share the practice with others and teach. So after many teacher trainings and a lot of handholding by my former boss or the former teacher that owns the studio that I used to teach in, I finally began to teach and move out of my shell because I wanted to share it with so many others. So can you tell me when that journey started? Because that's really pivotal, I think, in a lot of instructors' lives. At least it was for me. When you decided that you were ready to share the practice that you love so much on your own.
Yeah. So it's funny because when I look back and I look at all of these different directions that I kind of came to, when I found yoga and then saw like the ability for people to balance on their hand, it becomes really much more of like that ego-based, I wanted to do what they were doing. So the first time I walked into a class and saw the arm balances, I remember like it was yesterday walking in and seeing someone balancing in Bakasana doing crow pose and thinking, what? I'll never be able to do that. And then once I was able to, and it took time and I practiced it all the time, it's not uncommon for my kids to walk out downstairs from the bedroom and see me upside down. Their friends will come over and I'll forget that it's not normal for parents to do that. So they literally are like, oh my God, do you see what your mom's doing? And they're like, oh, that's just like no big deal. But the pivotal point to where I thought I wanted to share was when it wasn't about landing the pose. And I thought it would be so much about that. Like, oh my gosh, I did it. I just did it. And I wanted to share it with everyone. But what happened was larger than that. And what happened was I always reference this in my classes. I connected the dots. Like I of course can do it because human beings can do it and we're all human beings, right? I connected the dots within myself. And then what it gave me was this confidence and strength. And from there, I started believing in myself more. And so when I decided to teach, it was more that I kept thinking, gosh, if I had learned this long ago, like, how would my life be different? Would it be different? Would it be better? But again, it goes back to that idea that yoga finds you when you're ready. So for me, I wanted, at that time, my idea was like, I want to share this with children. I want to learn to teach yoga so that I can bring this to younger adults, kids, youth, so that they can see that it's so much more than trying to be like the person that you're near, so much more than trying to wanting to emulate it, that you really have the ability to make that difference and find that confidence and strength within yourself. So that truly was my initial drive. So I always thought I would teach kids yoga. And at the time, I had left my corporate job. I was at a marketing or advertising agency since graduating college. And I left that job when Abby was born and really should not have quit my job because we had no funding to support that. But somehow we figured it out and made it work. But I couldn't afford a package to purchase at a yoga studio. So I started doing some trade work where I could take classes and then help around the studio. So from there, and my practice grew and flourished, and I was just kind of gifted this opportunity. They needed a sub, and they said, you have a strong practice. That's the most important part. And I looked at them like, well, I just had kids. Like, I can't teach adults. And it was a definite road. Like, talk about, Jen and I always reference about kind of getting thrown out of your comfort zone, which we all like to stay in our safe, like under our blankets, where it's safe and we know what to expect. But when you get thrown out of your comfort zone and enter into this world of the unknown, magical things happen. So I truly respect and honor that gift that was handed to me at that time, though it was so out of my comfort zone. And I used to hide notes all over the room. And if I missed one thing on one side, I was like, oh my God, like it would just throw my brain right out of its normal working pattern. But that's just typically what you see in teaching. You know, it takes a while just to get comfortable. And then remembering, first of all, that it's not about you. And although I would always describe myself as not having an ego at that moment as a new teacher, when you're new and standing in front of a group, that's very much like that ego side of you, like worried about what people think of you, when really people are there to service themselves. So that took some time for me to shift and change that mentality. And when I would remember, it doesn't matter what I'm doing. It just matters that it's flowing appropriately. I'm not going to hurt someone. I'm not going to harm someone. So the pivotal moment for me when I was definitely a combination of those two things, kind of getting thrown out of my comfort zone and asked to support and sub a class for a teacher that wasn't able to make it. And then also just that idea of being able to take in the gifts that were given to me and how it made me feel and figuring out how I could share that to help someone else, whether it's learning the path of a posture or the alignment in a posture. It's all based on what I was doing. And then I started realizing that this was helpful. And I really just that energy, like when you're sharing that and you're done with a class and you just kind of allow it to settle within the students, you get to learn them in a way that supersedes just what we do in our normal lives. Mm-hmm. You see a different side. You see people start to be vulnerable, and it gives you the space to learn to be vulnerable as well. And I guess that was kind of when I said, I want to do this. But I also knew I always wanted to view myself as a student. So I just, from that point on, said, I want to be the best teacher I can be, not the best teacher comparatively to anyone else, but just like, I need to learn more because I love it. I love how it makes me feel. And so then I just started this path of like, I need to learn more, and did multiple workshops and trainings.
Amazing. I will say, I've done some kids yoga teaching in my past and I enjoyed it very much, but is very different, much harder, I would say, much more challenging to teach children than adults. Mm-hmm. However, with that being said, I feel like that's where it needs to start.
Yeah.
Is with our youth. Mm-hmm. And I can personally say if I had some of the tools and teachings and insight that I do as an adult, had I had them as a child or a youth, my path would have probably been very different, not in a comparative easier bad way or good or bad, just different, just a little more supported. So I know personally it's a much more challenging way to connect with children, and it takes a very special soul to be able to share yoga with children. And how has that evolved? And just really quickly, Katie is very well known in our community for teaching wonderful kids classes, children's classes, family yoga, which later in the podcast, we do have a family yoga class coming up with Katie. And they're so fun, empowering, but gentle and intuitive and connecting. And it's just a beautiful thing to watch and witness and be a part of when you're in her classes, especially the family yoga and her kids' classes. So when did that really take flight for you? When did the kids' classes? We're going to lead into where that's evolved next.
Yeah. So for me, kids have always been, like, kids are just inherently more honest and they're more courageous, right? It's like life starts to make it so that we stop trusting ourselves. Like, we start comparing, we start being told how we need to act, how we need to see. When you're dealing with young kids, it's so refreshing because they are like, oh, I can do anything. Like, they think they can fly, right? Like, they have those moments where just like, well, I can do that. And then they'll try and then they'll fall, and most likely they're going to get up. As we age and get older, I mean, our bodies change, obviously, our patterns change. And there's like, I don't know, this like perceived sort of expectation that we assume that if we do that, we'll look weird. So I don't want to do that. You even see it in some of the family classes where the parents get a little more reserved. Mm-hmm. It's, again, out of comfort zone because we're so used to putting on the perfect picture and being responsible. So I think that when I always knew that I loved working with kids. I fed off their energy as well. So all of those classes were very playful and it was super fun. And I would forget that most of the parents, when I would do some of my, back in the day when I would do preschool yoga classes, the parents were just so excited to watch the kids that you always had all these eyes looking in the room. And I would forget that they were even there. And I would be, you know, doing our little zoo trip adventure right down on my hands and knees with the kids. And most probably adults would be like, why would you ever do that? And it wasn't like I was making a lot of money for me. It was not about that. It was just something fun. And really, it gave me something to do with my kids as I was staying home. I could make some money for spending cash groceries and incorporate my kids so that I didn't have to worry about sitters and all of that. So, and the kids loved it. Like, I would have parents that would come and they had boys and they were like, oh my gosh, I can't believe that he actually sat still. Like, he was laying in, he never sits still for that long. Or parents that would tell me, describe how at home, their child never slept or had sleeping issues. And they noticed that they were just practicing their, breathing in their bedroom before bed, like eyes closed, sitting in Sukhasana, easy seated pose, and just breathing. And they're like, I don't know what to do. I've never seen my child do that. So it was really, for me, it was an even exchange. I got out more than they did. So I always liked that. And as my kids aged, I started teaching older kids. I could communicate with that level. I was used to it. Sure. So that helped. And I think I'm likely, in my 39-year-old body, I'm probably more at about age 13 most of the time. So that helps. Yes. And it does take that sort of ability to teach like that. So, but to segue into kind of the bigger picture of like what I started noticing. So first it was all about the playful. So kind of like how I started my yoga practice. It was all about like the arm balances and the headstands and doing this and sweating and workout. And then as I grew in my personal yoga practice, what ended up happening is that what brought me to yoga wasn't what kept me in yoga. I started noticing like what it really meant to breathe in a posture. When I found those lines, what it really was meant to do, I didn't need to be on my hands balancing upside down in order to find a connection to myself. I could be standing in a mountain pose, standing in Tadasana at the front of my mat, and it was the same as if I was inverted. Like, it just grew. The same idea happened with kids yoga. It was all about playful and keep them active so they don't get bored or want to run out of the room. And then, as I did it longer, and then as my children got older, and started noticing just how, you know, that childhood sort of courage and confidence starts to fade when you start worrying mm-hmm. about what your peers think. Then to me, the practice became like, well, what it needs to be beyond just being playful. because how can I make my, you know, now 10-year-olds remember that she's still that same kid, that same like kid that's not, doesn't have to worry about what other people think as long as she is being her best self and being kind. And that was what was most important.
Yes. And that starts to fade, right?
Yes.
I swear, fourth, fifth, sixth grade.
Yes.
And the biggest gift we can give all of our youth and our children is that wisdom within themselves to trust, right?
Yes.
Trust themselves. You know, peer pressure is very strong in our communities and trauma.
Mm-hmm.
And you name it, is happening. No matter what school district you're in, there are kids that are experiencing a lot of this stuff. You can call it bullying. You can call it trauma within their homes. It's all over and it's rampant, and you see it and I see it. You see it probably at a much bigger depth than I do, but I'm fully aware that it's out there, and that's kind of what I want to get into next. So I know that the word mindfulness is a huge buzzword in our collective conscious right now.
Mm-hmm.
And truthfully, in my opinion, anybody that starts to make a decision to unroll their yoga mat, whether they're in the studio or not, is already being mindful.
Yes.
that's part of it. That's what yoga is. It's mindfulness.
Mm-hmm.
So there is this big buzzword. However, what I believe that the mindfulness work and training is truly mindfulness when it filters down to teaching this to children.
Mm-hmm.
Because children, especially living in maybe households that don't have these tools or have the ability to learn, you know, how to breathe right, or all these wonderful things that can help a child through their anxiety, coping skills, is what mindfulness is all about, in my opinion, and can really help evolve our culture.
Mm-hmm.
And the kids is where it needs to start. And that's where I would love to introduce Katie. Katie is a mindfulness educator. She's been working with some specific school districts locally and really pioneering, in my opinion, she's really pioneering this type of support and healing for children. And she's moving into some districts that really, really need it. And she's creating her own training around it. And her new company, her new LLC, is called In Mind. And I just really want you to talk more about the mindfulness movement and what you see, where you see it going, and how you see your company. We'll just start with the mindfulness movement. Let's keep it simple, and then we'll go a little bit deeper into that.
Okay. So, as I mentioned, kind of that progression of teaching kids, and seeing where like it kind of served its purpose for the really young, and then I kind of got to this place where I thought there could be more. It was more about just having fun, but I didn't know how to really relay that message and how to kind of make it more impactful for teens and preteen age. So it always comes back to, you know, you can really learn a lot, even from the smallest of humans, you know, even no matter how old you are. So my daughter started suffering from some really bad anxiety, crippling anxiety. And it was really a difficult time to like watch that. And I can remember, I think mostly because it was like not just because it was my child, although that was a massive part because you always want to take and fix, right? But also because I can remember feeling that way, but I just never talked about it. I just kind of held it in. And the fact that we talked about the ADD past, I didn't want people to think there was something wrong. It was very taboo when we were younger, like therapy and like discussing things in open. You wanted to be the extrovert that was Miss Popular or Mr. Popular in school. So you were always worried about how you fit in. So when I started noticing, and I mean, the crippling episodes were like literal, like sick to her stomach, vomiting, not sleeping, not eating. It was a daily routine, so hard to get out the door. And this was an 8-year-old. And all my tools I had learned at that point now are just like thrown out the window because I thought, gosh, I can't fix this. And I would spend hours. We'd get to school and I would try to be strong through that, get to school. And then she would be fine. It was just literally like that separation moment. But I would try to research and implement all these new ideas. And I was like, I just don't know what to do. I found a lovely, wonderful behavioral therapist. And I would watch her in her 45-minute, sessions with my daughter, which I was not in. She would have her own time with her. I would come in the last 10 minutes. She would see her twice a month and I would literally go in and she'd give me the simplest tool and say, oh, this is going on. Oh, this is what we talked about today. This is what we said. Abby knows she signed this. She's going to do these little exercises. And I would walk away and go, that's it. And it would like be this massive transformation. And I saw literally like bits and little pieces of the puzzle start to form when Abby started to put those into effect. Like she was taking control of it. So instead of like looking at Abby as like explaining Abby and defining her as like, oh, that's my anxious child, it was the anxiety talking, not Abby. And it was like things like that, that it was like when I would talk to Abby and say, Abby, remember, this is not you. This is the anxiety. This is separate from you. And I just looked at her name's Melissa. I looked at her and I said, I need to learn everything you do. This is what every child needs, because no matter if they are the most popular and the most active, well-liked, well-rounded child, everyone is dealing with anxiety. Everyone is. So what happens is if we keep shoveling it under, it comes out in different ways. It might be your kid that's acting out aggressively, talking back for attention, as they get older, when you have young kids that are putting themselves in positions where they are out of control, it's like, why aren't they doing this in school? And I literally became like, I started doing my training through an organization called Mindful Schools. And simple lessons that takes maybe 20 minutes, one day to 2 days a week in a classroom, very minimal. It's just as important as kids learning their 1-2-3s and their ABCs and learning to read and write. They need to understand their body and that our mind isn't just our brain that sits on top of our head. Our minds, there's actually a second mind that resides within our lower body and our torso. So when you start to feel those nerves that come with being anxious or excited, when you start to feel the butterflies, kids relate to those experiences differently. And so all of that led me to, like, I know what works for me. A lot of it was yoga, the physical side, as well as then growing into the spiritual mental side. For me, for the kids component, I just became so compelled to like bring this to anyone that would let me talk about it. So I started, just after I completed my training, I started volunteering within our school district. I did a series with just the fourth grade classroom, which was my daughter's classroom, and then the other fourth grade classroom. I did a 6-week session at Parcells working with some middle schoolers, and every child took to it. And it's like, to me, it's so much about finding a way to relate to them and connect to them and explain it and make it active, which I would do with my younger classes, but it would be a bigger message that they could take away from it and really practice outside, because kids want that. Kids want, we tell them what to do every second of the day.
Sure. Mm-hmm.
They want to have some control, and what better way to say you can have control by pressing pause. And mindfulness is not anything related to any sort of religious background. Mindfulness can be a component. It is a component of meditation. However, mindfulness is different than meditation in that you can do it anywhere. You can be sitting and drinking a cup of coffee and just really tuning into like what sensations arise, what it is you like, how it feels when you're drinking it, taking a walk outside rather than tuning into your electronic device or music, taking a moment to just listen to the wind through the leaves. Like, it's something that doesn't require 20 minutes. You're just absorbing the moment. It can happen anywhere.
Yes, of the moment.
So then that's kind of where my mindfulness journey went. And I didn't start my LLC until this past summer. And I just said, this is what I want to do. And I'm one person. I also have a great school in East Point that I started working with after I was in the Grosse Pointe district, which was literally a mile in a different direction from where my kids go to elementary school, off the same main road, just you went left instead of right to get to the school. And when I walked into that building, and again, it was a fourth grade classroom, and then noticed how different the environment was, how like that, I just completely was then called to that direction. I mean, both schools received great benefits, but from the program. So anyone, this would serve any community. But what I found a lot in East Point was that these kids just wanted to be listened to.
Heard.
Yes, heard. That's it. Just like we do, right? Mm-hmm. And so much of their behavior, where they would get discounted, the school had lots and lots of suspensions. This was a school with third to fifth graders. And I understood it from every level, from the teachers being stressed and overworked. I mean, this was a classroom. My daughter in fourth grade had 24 students in her class. This particular classroom, a teacher was responsible for 34 students and no helper, no parent involvement. Mm. So it was like, how could anyone survive and thrive in that environment? I could not. If you put me in a room with 34 people having to, I would be so distracted, and they were kind of just stuck in their box, right? So that really kind of opened my eyes to like even more training. So I just really, then I started looking into more trauma-informed mindfulness practices to help serve and connect to needs that go above and beyond what I can experience, what I have experienced, but serves a place. And a lot of that time, like where I could go into one school with this curriculum and go through the lessons, ideally, I learned so much from those kids in East Point to where it was like, so not about the curriculum. It was just giving them a moment to talk, to cry if they needed to. I had students that were so, like the second I would have them alone, they would just start to cry.
And process.
Yes. And just quiet the classroom. 34 mm-hmm. in a small class. I mean, it's loud. Kids are loud. And teachers having to like talk over. I mean, it's just a difficult scenario no matter what. And not to say that they weren't doing their best, because I know those teachers were. But this is just another tool for survival, because as they get older, we all know they're going to face bigger challenges, you know? So I'm still working within those two communities. So that's kind of been my drive, as I'm just like one person. But always is the problem, of course, is funding and looking for resources.
Sure.
Yeah.
As most of you, if you have kids or you're in, you know, our public school system, there is very little funding for any of this type of extra outside emotional support. And as Katie said, it's just as important as learning, mm-hmm. you know, who the state capital is. Because mm-hmm. if children can grow up learning about their own body, learning how to handle their own emotions, knowing that they have a support system, whether it's in the home or within themselves, is the most vital thing we can offer the community.
Yeah.
The most vital thing.
Yes. It's our future, right?
It really, really is. It's where our future is. And as cliche as it sounds, it's exactly what is happening. Mm-hmm. So if we can start to touch some of these kids in these outlying districts that have very little funding, have very little support, and have classroom sizes that are, you know, 34 kids in one classroom without teacher assistance is mm-hmm. very hard. You're basically managing mm-hmm. you know, a classroom. And if you've got three or four kids that are, you know, really needing extra support, they're going to be the ones that are even louder, that mm-hmm. are going to be demanding it, speaking over everybody else. And it's a tough, challenging place to be in, not only for the school districts, but for the teachers mm-hmm. and the ones that are hurt the most mm-hmm. are the kids.
Yeah.
So, with all of this support, Katie has been relentlessly applying for grants, and there's one particular organization that I really want to, and hopefully mm-hmm. down the road you can interview
yes.
them. They're called Yoga by Design.
Yes.
And can you just talk a little bit about their organization and what they're all about? You don't have to go into too much detail, but they are supporting Katie and her in mind, and have given her a grant to go back into the East Detroit schools and continue to help this specific school that she's in. And just really quickly, I wanted to mention that the work she did there last year with the school was all by donation, and it's donors choose. I don't know about you guys, but I'm always looking for wonderful local community mm-hmm. places to donate to. Right here in Metro Detroit, I'm always looking for great. And Donors Choose is a wonderful classroom. It's different classrooms that teachers asking for donations. And she raised, do you know how much you raised?
The teacher did, right? Yes.
And then,
I don't know. I think I had gone in and then I did a 6-week and we ran out of funding. And I think I extended it for another week or two.
Yeah.
And the social worker at that school went off without, I wasn't involved in it anyway, and said, we need to bring her back, and just started a Donors Choose, and they raised $2,000, and I was able to come back at the end of last year and work with the entire school body, third, fourth, and fifth grade, which was also a great learning curve for me to see from when I went to working with, 34 students to then like an entire student body, which had three classrooms of at least 30 kids in it. Just kind of knowing what I can do, what my limit would be, and also meeting all of these new faces. So she did that all on her own, and
yes,
the school stood behind it. And I went back and worked with them again. So to go back to the Yoga by Design. So it's funny when we talk about like those crossing of paths. I have always known of Lynn Meadow, who is one of the head of the Yoga by Design Foundation. And we ended up crossing paths. I was teaching yoga at an institute where she was one of the head yoga therapists. And I wasn't even thinking about the grant, because the grants are like the business end of it. Like, I feel like I can teach in my sleep and do the work in my sleep. But when you add in all the business stuff, I'm like, I don't know. It's such a hard, it's like, navigating through uncharted like territory, right? So, but I had some interface with Lynn, and she said, "You know that we do work like this. Like, do you know you should apply for a grant?" And I again was staying under my blankets in my comfort zone, going, "I don't know if I should do this. Like, what? Like, I don't know. What if I do something wrong? Is like, what if I don't know what I'm doing, and can I really do this?" So it took me a little while, and they were really invested in wanting to have some mindfulness program. Yoga by Design is a foundation, is an amazing foundation where they literally, their goal is to bring yoga, mindfulness to underserved populations. They have really great fundraisers and really wonderful programs that support those that otherwise might not be able to find, yoga or any sort of meditative practices because of the funding purposes, right?
Sure.
So you're exposing a community to the benefits of it health-wise, and then obviously the mental aspects of it. So we kind of went back and forth. I wanted to finish training. I also contracted with an awesome organization in California who's been doing this type of work for the last 5 years called Mindful Life Project. So his name is JG. He helped me formulate kind of the terminology, create this proposal so that I could apply for this grant. And Yoga by Design Foundation, I obviously knew Lynn and really respected what she had, and also some of the board members that were sitting on the board. So I was like, this would be, if there was any place to start, this would be it. Mm. So I came and I presented kind of the work that I did. I explained kind of what I wanted to do. And they was probably one of the top three most exciting days of my life was when I got the email, and I was like, I want to have that job where you can just send congratulations.
Oh,
you've been awarded.
Yes.
You know, like, just I remember being at the table with my girls and I just started crying. I'm pretty sure I called Jen at that. I was like, oh my gosh, you won't believe this. But yes. Yeah, so it was a startup grant, which allows me to now have some funding to approach schools with. And I'm going to start with the schools that I worked with because I have that relationship and I know those students, and I'm just like so eager to get back into the doors. I'll do so in January and just start again and see where it takes me. And right now, like I said, I'm just one person, so I haven't advertised to other schools. But one day I hope to grow so that I can offer this and bring more people in to help bring this to the students and really educate parents and staff members, because the teachers love it too. I mean, we all need a little mindfulness in our
life. Absolutely.
You know what I'm talking about. Yep. So yeah, just so that's kind of my vision, and Yoga by Design Foundation really has provided me the opportunity. So I'm really excited about that.
Super excited for you and so proud of you.
Thank you.
And I'm a seed planter for those of you that know me. So I'm really hoping down the road that at some point Katie gets a fellowship to do something like this. That's the seed I'm planting for her. Because the work is so important and it's so needed. And this is, to the community out there that's listening, this is what yoga off the mat is all about. So, Katie, if you would like to donate to her, program in mind, you can do so by, going to yogabydesign.com. There's a drop down menu so you can funnel the funds right. There's many things that they donate, you can donate to for Yoga by Design. If you want to specifically give to this program that Katie is so lovingly, putting out to the world and our Metro Detroit community, just from the drop down menu, it's in mind, correct, Katie?
Yes.
Just in mind, and it will go directly to her program. All that funding goes directly to her and right into the schools.
Yes.
So, and then additionally, if you want to catch Katie's classes,
yes,
you can hit our studio, come to our studio if you're in the Downriver area. We're located in downtown Wyandotte, and her classes are Tuesday evenings. She teaches three classes Tuesday evening. She teaches two classes Sunday morning, and then end of the month, December 29th, she is doing a family yoga workshop, which is at 12 noon. It's a Friday. It's during winter break. It usually sells out. It's so wonderful to do with your kids. If you're looking to maybe spend a little time with your family doing something connective and enjoyable, I would highly recommend it. And I think that is it, Katie,
yes.
Our first podcast.
I'm so honored.
Thank you so, so
much, you.
Everybody, and to Katie, and keep inspiring us. I'm so inspired by you.
Oh, and it's reciprocated. Yes.
Just check out our studio, check out our podcast. In 2 weeks, we have one coming up with another instructor at the studio, and we're going to be featuring an awesome event she's doing outside of the studio called In the Light. And so we'll be talking about that in 2 weeks right before her event. And that is it, everybody. I hope you all have a wonderful week. Thank you for listening. And namaste.
Namaste.
Excellent.
Yay.